Thanks, Blessing Zulu. Good evening, Zimbabwe. It's 17 hours 20 UTC, 7:20 p.m. in Zimbabwe on Saturday, March 12th, 2016. You're listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Gibbs Dube. Here are our top stories this evening. The International Crisis Group says the future looks bleak for Zimbabwe.
The rule of law is still being dealt with selectively in Zimbabwe, and there is clear evidence of continued abuses.
Zimbabwe's Minister of Women's Affairs condemns child abuse and early child marriages, and as promised this evening, we are featuring musician and human rights activist Nyaratso Mashamombe. The International Crisis Group's recent briefing on Zimbabwe paints a gloomy picture of the country's future. Released in February, the briefing titled Zimbabwe Stranded in Stasis notes the country's lack of meaningful reforms in the areas of rule of law and governance, and also the extent of the political uncertainty and economic insecurity. The ICG's Southern African Programme Director, Pierre Pigou, tells Studio 7's Ndimiyake Mokelele that much of the concern is pinned around President Mugabe's ability to lead, given the state of the country and his party, despite his age and concerns about his health.
What we saw with Mr. Mugabe's birthday was a kind of faux sense of unity amongst the leadership of ZANU-PF. I don't think many people really believe that they've all kissed and made up. But having said that, ZANU-PF has a long history of being able to pull together in the face of adversity. The question really is there glue now inside the party, which was traditionally Mr. Mugabe? Does that glue really hold the party together? And is there an external threat or enemy that they will be able to come together and face? At this stage of the game, it doesn't look likely. And I have to say that there is certainly no major consensus about how this is going to play out. And this, of course, goes to the heart of the danger and the instability that our briefing, Stranded in Stasis, points out, that there is a necessity for ZANU-PF to provide some stability by giving some clarity on the succession issue. And, this fiction that is being peddled by ZANU-PF that Robert Mugabe will stand as the candidate for the party in 2018 when he is 94 years old, I'm afraid reflects the kind of ludicrousy that is being peddled by senior members of ZANU-PF at the moment, which certainly does not contribute to presenting an image of stability and build confidence either internally within Zimbabwe or indeed regionally or internationally.
But the report does make reference to some of the statements that President Mugabe made, including at the State of the Nation, where he seemed to embrace the possibility of reforms. And it seems as though the briefing, at least, or the report is saying that if President Mugabe and his party do walk the talk, that there's maybe possibility of a better Zimbabwe within a ZANU-PF administration.
Well, yes. I mean, we're not discounting the possibility of potential progress under ZANU-PF's tutelage. The problem that we have to date is that essentially what we see on the table at the moment is evidence of a political leadership that is not taking the reform process seriously, is cherry-picking at certain issues, playing to the theatre of reform, and really not dealing with the profound structural challenges that face Zimbabwe. And there are a number of low-hanging fruit and issues that it could pursue but has chosen not to with respect to that. At the moment, the reform agenda is looked at narrowly through the lens of economic and financial reform through the SMP process that we see at the moment, and the IMF are likely to give Zimbabwe a green light on those issues. But I have to say, when it comes to issues around rule of law and governance, there are major, major problems in Zimbabwe.
Now, what is the possibility of anything changing before the 2018 elections, and what could those be?
Well, of course, the big game changer is going to be whether Mr. Mugabe stays at the top of the pile there and how the succession issue plays out. As the report notes, we're concerned that the ZANU-PF constitution is somewhat opaque on the issue of succession within the party. And we've seen what's going on in terms of the dynamics around successionist factionalism for control of provincial leadership and so forth. And that really reflects major concern about how subsequently the party is going to be able to pull together and with internal legitimacy put forward a candidate that the party can all rally behind. The 2018 elections themselves, I'm afraid, looking at the deficit, the electoral process relating to the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission and the somewhat nefarious role that the Registrar General continues to play in relation to the voter's roll, which he still will not release, claiming a technical fault that no one knows what it is. I'm afraid we seem to be sleepwalking towards another illegitimate election in 2018.
And one more thing also, if you could address from the brief, the approach of the international community that seems to be watching from a distance, but at the same time ready to do something when the occasion calls. So what do you think will be the trigger where they'll be all in?
I think we're going to have to see some significant shifts as it relates to rule of law and governance concerns, and that relates to issues around the investment code and the controversial indigenization processes in Zimbabwe, which are still not clarified, that there are proper functioning systems of transparency and accountability in terms of government expenditure, that we see a commitment to the rule of law and issues around property rights are resolved, issues of compensation around the abuses on the farms, which, of course, the Zimbabwean government has always claimed that it will pay, it will deal with compensation, but yet hasn't done that. But, you know, what we've seen, for example, in the last couple of months is a series of evictions and violations, unlawful occupations of farms and abuses in the land process, which reflect the kind of broader-based problems that I've been talking about during the course of this interview, that the rule of law is still being dealt with selectively in Zimbabwe, and there is clear evidence of continued abuses.
That is Pierre Pigou, who is the Southern African Programme Director for International Crisis Group. He spoke with Studio 7's Nimiake Mokelele from Johannesburg, South Africa. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington. We are broadcasting on 909 meter wave and on the 4930, 5940 and 15460 shortwave frequencies. Now it's time for the Women's Forum.
Welcome to the Women's Forum, a forum where we look at issues affecting women. I'm Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye. Tonight on the Women's Forum, we're gladly joined by Amai Nyasha Chikwinya, a member of the ruling party ZANU-PF, Minister of Women's Affairs and Gender and Community Development, as well as the House of Assembly representative for Mutare South constituency. Welcome to the Women's Forum, Amai Chikwinya.
Oh, thank you very much for inviting me to the forum.
Can you give us your take on the recently ended International Women's Day? How important is it for women of Zimbabwe?
This is a very important occasion for women, not just in Zimbabwe, but all over the world. A day we commemorate the achievement of women. A day we commemorate the advancement of women. A day we commemorate and look back to check where women were last year and where we ought to go as women of the world and women in Zimbabwe. At the day where we start putting on the calendar issues and agenda of women in terms of way forward. A day where we recognize women all over the world who have made it in life as way of inspiring those of our women who do as well. A day where we inspire the girl child so that the girl child emulates the good things that are being done by women all over the world. So we look at this day as just not an event, but a milestone for achievements in the course of the year. 2016 to 2020 is a decade for women. 2020 to 2030, the world has devoted itself for human rights for women and economic empowerment for women. So we look forward to achieve the 50-50 by 2030.
Minister, you were talking about a women's microfinance bank that is in the making. Tell us a little bit about that. How will it help women?
There hasn't been an institution specifically designed for women. This is the first of its kind in Zimbabwe. So definitely it's a step forward for recognizing women as an entity. And they're also encouraging the existing financial institutions to have financial inclusion programs in their banks, specifically to address issues of women because of cultural issues. We have lots of hardworking women, women who have done well, but because they don't have collateral, they've been denied opportunities of growth. So we are trying to open doors in that manner.
What about the issue of early marriages and child abuse? We've seen the president castigating at his birthday the high incidence of child abuse, especially for young girls. What's your take?
The constitutional ruling of the 21st of January 2016, which two young Zimbabwean girls challenged in that position. And there was a ruling which, from the effect of that day, that no one should marry or should be married before they attain the age of 18. Being that the case, I'm currently pushing that agenda to Parliament so that it's law. And what that happens, the girl child is in much better position. But we also have to align to child marriages, because the Marriage Act, there's a disparity there, and we are addressing that issue with Parliament and with the judicial services. So that, I can assure you, in the next 90 days, it will be thing of the past.
Time is not on our side. Thank you very much, Minister Nyasha Chikwinya, for having been our guest on the Women's Forum, a forum where we look at issues affecting women.
I thank you.
I'm Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye.
Thanks very much, Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye. We hope you're going to have a lovely weekend.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID, and the Coca-Cola Company have announced support for a new program in Nigeria under the Water and Development Alliance, also known as the WADA Project. The $2 million project will provide up to 100,000 citizens in Cross River State with access to safe drinking water and good sanitation facilities by 2019. This joint investment is aligned with USAID and Coca-Cola's shared focus on clean water provision as a means to help build healthy, sustainable communities in Nigeria. The U.S. government is committed to engaging in effective and innovative alliances with committed partners to support Nigeria's critical development needs, said William Stoyer, acting U.S. Consul General in Lagos. We are proud to collaborate with Coca-Cola to bring a sustainable and safe water solution to thousands of people in Nigeria, he added. During the signing event, USAID Mission Director to Nigeria, Michael Harvey, said, "Today we are consolidating a special partnership, one in which a private firm has joined with a U.S. government agency to contribute to a priority set by the government of Nigeria." USAID and Coca-Cola have collaborated in Nigeria since 2007. The partnership has improved water resource management and expanded sustainable access to safe drinking water and sanitation services in Kano and in Yugu states. The Water Project helps to control and prevent water-related diseases such as cholera, typhoid, and diarrhea by providing water and sanitation services, hygiene education, and establishing water, environment, and sanitation committees in communities where the project works. This new agreement will provide a framework to implement WADA and to allow the parties to establish a range of policy issues to achieve their shared objectives in Nigeria. The United States is proud to work with Nigeria and its international and private sector partners to give the Nigerian people better access to something all human beings need, safe drinking water.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
And as promised, this evening we are featuring musician, human rights activist, Nyarazo Masha Amombe of Take a Life International.
My name is Nyarazo Masha Amombe, affectionately called Nyari. I'm the founder and director of Take a Life International, a girl child rights organization and a young women's organization. I'm also a musician with three albums to my name and the recent release called Ratiri. I never thought I would be a musician, so I pursued everything else but music. And I would say I took after my mom. My mom has got an amazing voice. And so came 2003, 2004, when there was the rise of urban grooves in Zimbabwe and gospel music as well, where the likes of Fungisai and Anamai Soloma and Yanat Black Cities were Nika, Rana Fungisai, you know, doing those things. And my friends in Bulawa, you actually said, "Nyari, you know what? You have an amazing voice," because I was in the choir as well. I One of the friends was Dumisani Nkomo. I don't even know if he remembers, but he was one of the people who really identified my talent. Zakiri has a heavy presence of gospel, and the gospel of it is amazing in that it's a local Zimbabwean Afro feel jazz gospel, which I feel like it's necessary for us as Zimbabweans, probably as Shona or Ndebele or whatever, to sing the way that God created us so that it glorifies them as well. However, that album also speaks about human rights. There's a song called Africa. All those songs either talk about human rights or talks about also issues of governance, issues of accountability, issues of plundering that has been happening in Africa. And then also it talks about the beauty of Africa. There's the beautiful natural side of Africa that I sing about in a song called Happy Day. There's a song called Cry that features Chuoni Somarere as well. Cry really is a reflection and a depiction of the challenges that girls and young women go through. But we've also seen that many of the girls are suffering, for instance, issues of rape, child marriage, but at some point that 74% of girls and young women are raped by people that they know. So the song gives consciousness and it builds an awareness around people to say, how can we protect our girls? How can we make communities and places and homes for the girls? And then so when I wrote that song, I kind of was thinking about Chuoni So Otu. It's also love music there, because I mean we are love beings. So there's a song that's called Dokudabo. It's a love ballad that I hope people begin to listen to it. So my mom, she's my heroine. You are my heroine. So when the song opens, it says, "You are my heroine, the one I wanna walk like, pray like mama." So she's a prayerful person, but she's so tenacious. I remember on my Facebook wall on International Women's Day, I said, she's my steel magnolia. She's very strong and yet so precious and yet so loving. You are my hero, the one I want to walk like, pray like, mama, mama, mama. You are my strength, my pride. You've been there when everyone gave up on me. You are my confidence.
That's Nyaradzo Mashaomombe of Take a Life International coming out there for Studio 7 in Washington. Now to recap today's top stories. The international crisis group says the future looks bleak for Zimbabwe. And Zimbabwe's Minister of Women's Affairs condemns child abuse and early child marriages. That's our broadcast this evening. Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele with Chris Gande. This is Kip Stube in Washington, D.C., wishing you a pleasant evening and a very, very good night.